Federal law promises that special education students will get a sound, individualized education that takes account of their disabilities. In the Philadelphia school system, as in many others, it's an open secret that schools often don't have all the resources they need to truly deliver on that promise. WHYY's Kevin McCrory brings us this look at how the budget crunch has affected one special ed teacher who feels she's been set up for failure.
Emotional support teacher Danielle Dan came to the Philadelphia School District 4 years ago from Bloomington, Indiana, eager to devote herself to the city's most vulnerable students. She arrived at Center City's Ben Franklin High School with a mix of idealism and determination, certain that she could help kids overcome big problems by taking time to get to know them, talking honestly, and building rapport.
The thing that works best for my students that are on my caseload is if they can make a connection with somebody that they can come to and say, I'm feeling really angry. I'm feeling really frustrated. What should I do? They need to be able to trust somebody.
Dan's students have lawfully binding individualized education plans that spell out what the school should do to help kids get a great education that's customized to their emotional or behavioral problems.
I need to be able to take time and say what happened. They need to know that I care, that I'm interested, that somebody is listening. And after they feel that they're heard, then maybe they can hear what other people are saying too.
During her first year on the job, Dan felt she was able to do those things pretty well. Her student caseload was under legal limits. Then the budget axe fell. Dan watched caseloads balloon and students receive less and less individualized attention. At the end of last school year, the district shuttered 24 schools and shed about 5,000 staffers. Ben Franklin, receiving some of the displaced students, saw its enrollment rise by more than 250.
When we hear about the school closings and the deficit, I don't think people are realizing what that looks like and that we're making the problems worse.
At the beginning of the school year, Franklin High had 5 high-incidence special education teachers for 164 students. To live within state caseload maximums, the teachers said the school should have at least 3 more instructors. Dan remembers school leaders reassuring teachers that
the district knows they're sending somebody over.
Dan waited and waited.
So September goes by, October goes by.
In past years, Dan had no more than 20 students on her caseload and had to lead teach only 2 classes of special ed students. This year, she's had more than twice as many cases and has had to lead teach 4 classes.
How am I going to help facilitate them going out into the world and being successful if I don't even know what they look like?
The ratios were just as out of whack for Dan's colleagues. So in early December, Dan and 5 other teachers at Franklin filed a complaint with the district and the state. Sonia Kerr, director of disability rights at the Public Interest Law Center, has been hearing from parents, teachers, and advocates about a sharp fall-off this year in special ed services, a direct result of layoffs and school closings.
Prior to the closings last spring, we wrote Dr. Height and said, so what's going to happen with all these kids with disabilities? And we got back a vanilla letter saying everything will be fine. Well, we know it's not fine.
By the end of December, one of Dan's fed-up colleagues quit. But Dan didn't blame her, particularly in light of the concessions the district is demanding from the teachers' union.
At a time when I'm fully aware that my students are not getting what I should be giving them, what I want to give to them, and I'm being asked to do the job of 2 people, I'm at the same time being threatened by the district that I'm going to have a huge pay cut.
By January, the state had interviewed teachers at the school as part of its investigation, but nothing had changed. At that point, by the end of every school day, Dan felt overwhelmed.
And then going home feeling really defeated, having all sorts of special ed paperwork for so many kids, many of them that I don't get to interact with. I don't know the kids, yet I'm still writing individualized education plans for them. It doesn't feel right to me. I feel like I'm functioning in a way that lacks integrity, and I'm not willing to do it.
This week, finally, Dan got some good news. The district hired a teacher to replace her colleague who quit in December. Also, based on her complaint, the state has ordered the district to add enough teachers by mid-March to comply with special ed law. The district says it can afford to hire enough teachers to comply, but its overall budget woes are far from over. Last week, it said it needed an additional $200 million just to keep staff and services at this year's dismal levels. For Dan, the prospect of going through another year like this is just too much.
I'm resigning at the end of this year.
She says she simply can't stick around and put herself in a position to again shortchange students.
Sometimes it feels to me like it's more of a disservice to make a to make a start at helping and then not to follow through. When I try to establish a relationship with a student and I am trying to let them know that I am a trustworthy person and that they can come to me, if I can't follow through with that, then I am another person in their life that betrayed their trust.
Although a new job isn't lined up, Dan plans to move to the Pacific Northwest, about as far from the Philadelphia School District as she can go. For WHYY News, I'm Kevin McCory.
Over the past 4 years, the Philadelphia School District has voluntarily turned 20 of its chronically lower-performing neighborhood schools over to charter organizations. This year, the district would like to convert two more elementary schools to charters. But in a twist, it's allowing parents to vote for or against the measure in a May 1st election. In the run-up to this year's vote, WHYY's Kevin McCory visited a North Philadelphia elementary that was converted last year, where the debate over charterization is still playing out in the halls of the school.
When Sherita Cromwell, mother of three, learned last year that her kid's school, Kenderton Elementary, would be converted to a charter, her heart sank.
Because I'm a parent of kids with autism, I'm all about routine, structure and routine. And that's how a lot of our parents are. So when we heard about the change, we were kind of upset.
Cromwell organized parents to fight back and stop the switch.
You know, we went to the SRC meetings. We were the folks on the news holding the signs. We don't want it to happen. No, no, no.
Despite her efforts, the Philadelphia School Reform Commission voted to turn Kenderton into a Renaissance charter run by the Scholar Academies organization. Unlike lottery-based charters, Renaissance schools must serve all kids living within neighborhood boundaries. Although Cromwell was disappointed at first, she soon began to see the value in the conversion.
Just to walk into a school and not have kids in the hall, just running around the hall and staff just staring at them, nobody saying anything, was a big difference for us because this school last year, it was out of control. It was really like a scary situation for a lot of kids here.
Cromwell discussed her evolving thoughts on Kenderton's charter conversion at a recent parent open house organized by a North Philly community group as well as the Philadelphia School Partnership. Parents of kids attending elementary schools in the surrounding area toured Kenderton and were given a chance to look under the hood.
We're going to pop in classes. Feel free to walk in. If you have some conversation, I would just say have that conversation back in the hall.
As parents navigated the building, they saw clean, bright hallways and classrooms named not by number, but for colleges and universities.
Patel's class is actually LaSalle University.
Like many charters, Scholar Academies employs a college, college, college rhetoric, as Kenderton School Director Hedy Balcowie sums it up.
Outrageous achievement, no excuses value. That means that we're constantly pushing, we're constantly talking about academics.
It's a mantra they push early and often, as these kindergartners can attest to. But Kenderton isn't just relying on mantras. Cromwell says the school has way more support staff. Scholar Academies can afford them because it hires non-unionized staff and carries much less centralized overhead compared to district-run schools. With these extra supports, the school can provide much more one-on-one attention to students struggling with academics or discipline. One fifth grader describes the difference in environment this way.
It's like they strict.
It's difficult at this point to really judge whether Kenderton's conversion is working, but parents on the tour were by and large impressed. Aisha Brumfield has a son and a younger brother at the district-run Meade Elementary, another in North Philly.
The stuff that I see here today, I'm definitely going to take back to Meade and try to use it as a reference, especially how bright the hallways and everything look. That's an inspiration, yes.
But when pressed, Brumfield bristled at the notion of her kid's school ever being turned into a Renaissance charter.
I'm so used to a public school, I don't I'm not in favor of charter schools. I have nothing against charter schools, but I love public schools.
As we talked, school director Balcowie drew himself into the conversation, and all of a sudden, a microcosm of the city's education debate came to life in Kenderton's halls. Forget the word charter, he said. Renaissance schools are neighborhood public schools.
Any single kid, doesn't matter if you have an IEP, any kind of, you're able to come to this school. You're going to be equipped with great teachers, a supportive administration. Mm-hmm.
But we had the same thing in Meade. We have autistic support there. Mm-hmm. We pretty much everything that y'all have here, we have at Meade. It's just...
Here, something was on the tip of Brumfield's tongue that she was embarrassed to reveal. She and another Meade parent conspired for a moment in whispers.
Whisper to me in my ear so I know I'm lost.
Then Brumfield turned and said,
I'll just be blunt and say it. We don't have the funding. That's about it.
John Polk, Kenderton's chief of staff, jumped into the conversation to explain that charters have more flexibility with how they spend money, making a not-so-subtle swipe at the teachers' union.
It's all about the adults, right, and how the adults make things work and benefit for the children.
Brumfield held firm.
I went to Meade when I was, like, 4 years old. My mom went to Meade, so I can't see Meade as a charter school.
As the conversation heated up, the Scholar Academy's communications director stepped in to drop the curtain. And with that, the conversation ended, neither side giving an inch. For WHYY News, I'm Kevin McCory.
Since last spring, Philadelphia school district leaders have been sounding the alarm about this year's fiscal plight. But even after months of hand-wringing and headlines, schools have wound up with less than last year. WHYY's Kevin McCory has this look back on a summer of false starts, bluffs, and political theater.
Here was Superintendent William Height in late April, explaining what would happen if the district didn't receive enough funds to close its budget gap.
Our schools will go from insufficient to just empty shelves that do not represent what I consider a functioning school.
Height said he was agnostic about the source of the funding, but offered a laundry list of revenue-generating options, including making permanent the 1% city sales tax hike, authorizing the Philadelphia cigarette tax, instituting a statewide tax on natural gas drilling, and giving schools a greater share of city real estate taxes. A little more than a month later, still none of these things happened, and the possibility of 1,000 more layoffs and outrageous class sizes across the board seemed more likely. This was Height at a school reform commission meeting in late May.
After cutting all that we cut a year ago, how is it possible that we're asked to cut any more? How is it possible that we can say to our students that we're going to take more things away?
By mid-June, City Council ditched its plan to split the sales tax proceeds between city pensions and schools. Following the clamor of advocates and Mayor Nutter, they decided to give $120 million to the district. Council also pledged to borrow an additional $30 million for schools. There ended concrete substantive action, and much of the rest of the summer was spent watching the state legislature hem and haw about authorizing the Philadelphia cigarette tax. In late June, State Budget Secretary Charles Zogby, a Corbett administration official, made it plain that passage would require a quid pro quo. Then and now, Republican leadership has been hoping to pass state employee pension reform.
So if Philadelphia Democrats aren't going to be there for what needs to be done, then nobody's going to be there for them. And they can go home and tell their constituents why there's no money, like they couldn't get any money for the school district.
Spokesman for House GOP leadership Steve Miskin affirmed that view.
I'm just telling you, the cigarette tax is off the table as long as they continue to be a no on everything. You know, it's not just a one vote. It's, you know, the whole series. If they continue to be a no on everything, that's where it's at.
Passage was also gummed up by disagreements over other non-related items stuffed into the bill that put Republican leaders in the House and Senate at odds. As public pressure mounted, Governor Corbett distanced himself from the quid pro quo position and urged the legislature to pass a clean cigarette tax bill. But then the legislature departed Harrisburg for vacation, and House leadership admitted that they were having trouble convincing members to reconvene during their months-long summer break. Around this time, a frustrated Wendell Pritchett resigned from his post as a school reform commissioner.
We, the school district and the SRC, have made tons of difficult decisions over the past 3 years. We closed 31 schools. We laid off 500 administrative staff, 5,000 people. Despite the fact that we've made a lot of difficult decisions, there are not that many other people that are willing to make difficult decisions to support our kids, and that's pretty frustrating.
With all eyes focused on the cigarette tax, Height upped the ante by raising the possibility of shortening the school year. In early August, Corbett called a press conference at his Philadelphia office to announce a fix that he said would allow schools to open on time.
I'm authorizing today $265 million in advance payments to the Philadelphia School District. These payments represent an early disbursement of funds that the district would normally receive throughout the school year.
Height, though, mere moments later, with Corbett at his back, essentially said the announcement didn't make a difference. Despite the press conference, the district had already been counting on that advance. Holding on to a hope that the legislature would reconvene to pass the cigarette tax, Height again continued to threaten a shortened school year. But in the face of logistical realities, in mid-August, Height finally showed his cards.
To delay school opening, during which time we would be required to continue paying employees, make our charter school payments, and meet other contractual obligations, all while students are not being educated, punishes students for the failures of adults.
Schools opened on time, and the district has thus far avoided mass layoffs by banking on the promise that cigarette tax money will begin flowing by October. House leadership says that will happen, but given the summer squabbles between the House and Senate, uncertainty persists. For WHYY News, I'm Kevin McCrory.
Today's the first day of classes for more than 130,000 students in the Philadelphia School District, and for the second year in a row, district officials admit they're opening without enough money to properly educate children. As WHYY's Kevin McCrory reports, despite a summer of budget drama, schools will open with even less than last year.
When the Philadelphia School District adopted its doomsday budget last summer, protesting teachers shut down North Broad Street. Students banded together to demand better. This year, advocates directed their energy at passing a Philadelphia cigarette tax, which is expected to generate tens of millions for schools annually. Pennsylvania lawmakers say they'll pass it by mid-September. The district says if cigarette tax money doesn't start flowing by October, more layoffs are on the horizon. This year's budget already trims money for school police, building maintenance, and special education, on top of last year's cuts. School nurse Ann Keenan already feels completely overextended, splitting time among 1,600 students at five different schools.
I almost feel like I'm enabling bad behavior by coming to work, knowing that these kids are really missing out on any quality, consistent health care and support.
Last year, two students died after leaving schools where there wasn't a nurse on duty. A first grader from Andrew Jackson Elementary, one of Keenan schools, died suddenly of a rare congenital heart defect. That day, she was at another school.
Now there's a question, and that's an awful feeling, I would think, for parents or, and absolutely the staff who have kind of stepped up, but certainly don't feel that they were maybe, you know, fully equipped, and that's an awful feeling for the rest of their lives.
To cope, Keenan tries to avoid dwelling on the district's overall problems.
If you look at the big picture, you really probably won't get out of bed. So you just know you just stay focused, priority, do the best you can, and that's what I do.
For WHYY News, I'm Kevin McCrory.
Mass protests and street closures greeted the first public meeting since the Philadelphia School Reform Commission unilaterally terminated the teachers' union contract last week. As WHYY's Kevin McCrory reports, more than 1,000 union supporters flooded North Broad Street last night to decry the SRC's action.
Cayuga Elementary teacher Will Hamilton isn't the sort who typically shows up to School Reform Commission meetings. Last night, though, he came wearing Philadelphia Federation of Teacher red, with his sights set on the governor's election in November.
I'm pretty angry, and I'm a registered Republican, and I'm not voting Republican. I'm very angry.
Hamilton blames incumbent Governor Tom Corbett for allowing the district's funding to dwindle so much that the SRC had to impose health care concessions on the union so it could plow the savings into classrooms. For many teachers, they now have to pay for health insurance for the first time. For him, the concessions will cut his take-home pay by $7,000.
You know, I've got two kids in college. I'm struggling to pay for them. Now I'm supposed to put out more money. I don't know where it's going to come from.
The teachers were supported in their protest by many other Philadelphia labor unions, and participants heard rallying cries from several Democratic politicians. Stoking the teachers' fire even further with a dozen or so anti-PFT protesters on the scene, who it was revealed this week were paid to attend the event by the conservative Commonwealth Foundation. Amidst the noise, Science Leadership Academy teacher Erin Giorgio held her infant son, who was fastened to her chest in a carrier. In front of the baby, a sign read, "My mom keeps her contract with her students."
I'm a new parent. I have a 4.5-month-old, and I am hopeful that in the next couple of years that my child will be a Philadelphia Public Schools student. So I am very, very concerned that as the SRC unilaterally broke our contract, that is going to cause a lot of teachers to leave the school district.
Inside the meeting, the 5-member SRC listened to a long line of angry teachers, parents, and education advocates. Among them was Jesse Epps, one of the organizers of the 1968 sanitation worker strike in Memphis.
Please take the blinders off and realize that the amount you are targeting to save will trigger the need for greater expenditures than the amount you think you're saving.
There were a few people who spoke in support of the SRC's move. Each time, members of the crowd grew hostile and attempted to drown them out with heckles and chants. More than a decade ago, Helen Cunningham was a member of the Philadelphia School Board before the School Reform Commission came into existence.
Having been a volunteer doing the same job as USRC members, I remember how hard a job it is. I remember... how unpopular doing the right thing can be.
Many of the teachers and parents who spoke said they felt the SRC's action vilified the profession and ignored the myriad sacrifices that teachers make daily. The actual substance of the night's meeting was an afterthought. By the time the SRC actually voted on building sales and charter non-renewals, the room was almost empty. Afterwards, Superintendent Height said he understood the teachers' frustration, but said the SRC's action was necessary after more than 100 bargaining sessions with the union failed to yield a new contract.
It's an easy conversation if you don't have to make a choice. We had to make a choice, and I chose to make a choice to get resources back into schools.
By imposing health care concessions, the district says it can reallocate more than $50 million this year and $200 million over 4 years. The teachers' union vows to fight the health coverage changes in court. For WHYY News, I'm Kevin McCory.
The Philadelphia School District has had more than its share of strife over the past few years. School closings, layoffs, draconian cuts to classroom resources, and funding ultimatums have created a long string of negative headlines. But as WHYY's Kevin McCory reports, there are pockets of parents in the city who, despite the turmoil, have been doubling down on the idea of public education even before their kids start school.
They like dark bars, craft beers, cooing babies, and hold a deep belief in the power of public education. Meet the new generation of urban professional parents who just may be crucial to the long-term success of the Philadelphia School District. At two separate evening events this week, throngs of young, civically-minded Philadelphia parents gathered at bars to drink in the notion of sending their infant and toddler children to neighborhood public schools.
If you visit that school and you go talk to the leader of that school and you interact with the teachers and you see the vibrancy of that school community, I think anyone would agree it's a wonderful place to be, and it's a real the keystone of our neighborhood.
Tom Wyatt, an attorney by trade, chairs the education committee of the Paschunk Square Civic Association in South Philly, where the local school is Andrew Jackson Elementary. At an event organized by Philly core leaders, Wyatt told a tale common among the young involved types holding pint glasses at the Center City Bar. His kids, a 6-month-old and a 3-year-old, are still a ways from enrolling in kindergarten, but he and his wife are digging in to make the school better now. Funding crisis be damned.
I don't mean to in any way pretend to be naive about the problems of funding, but if you go to your school and you look into the opportunities to dig in and help, you'll find them. And it'll sustain you and inspire you.
Also at the event was Ivy Olish, who 5 years ago founded the Friends of Chester Arthur, a school in the Graduate Hospital neighborhood. That was a year before she was even pregnant.
So we first went to the school and walked around and said, oh, this like seems totally fine. I don't know what people are talking about. It's safe. There's learning happening. Kids seem to be happy to be there. Teachers seem happy to be there. I don't understand what the big deal is. And from that point on, we were committed.
Doomsday budget headlines and intermittent reports of violent incidents, she says, can make it difficult for some parents to think that the Philadelphia public school system is a viable option.
It's concerning to me that all you hear is how terrible the state of public education in Philly is. And while there are serious issues that need to be brought to the public's attention, there's not enough attention paid to the successes that are happening in spite of everything else.
Immersed in the neighborhood as a viable community voice, Friends of Chester Arthur has been able to influence major decisions at the school, such as who was chosen last year as the school's new principal. To the Philadelphia School District, parents like Wyatt and Olesh are a godsend. The more middle-class and upper-income taxpayers who stay in the city and work to improve schools, the more parents who will decide to stay and do the same. The vicious cycle that the district often suffers through now could become a virtuous one. Across town the following night, the Friends of Adair set up shop in a bar in Northern Liberties. There's a spread of mini burgers and fancy cheese for the IPA-sipping adults, a table of crayons and board books for the rambunctious kiddos.
I want to see that my kid is in the kind of school where the parents are going to rally together and get what needs to get done.
Chris Morrissey Grubb has a 4-year-old daughter and an 18-month-old son.
Right now the school needs curtains for the auditorium, so there's no reason why a group of parents can't get together and figure out what kind of grants we can research or what kind of money we can raise or how we can help make that happen.
Adair, Jackson, and Arthur each share the common thread that they're situated in some of the most rapidly gentrifying neighborhoods in Philadelphia. And like the elementary schools in the city's already established top-flight neighborhoods, these schools benefit from a level of private fundraising and parent involvement that often just isn't possible in the poorest areas. Even with those advantages, parents like Morrissey Grubb admit that they're remaining cautious.
Well, my children might go there, so obviously that's my... Might go there. Yeah, depending on, you know, if... Wait, take that out. I think if we see a lot of progress and if we see a lot of change and if we see a lot of, the things we want to see in a school for our kids, yeah.
As far as academics, each of the schools mentioned here scored well below state benchmarks on standardized tests. Fishtown dad Avery Amaya says he and his wife can't ignore that.
I'm holding Logan, my son, my 4.5-year-old, who's headed off to kindergarten next year. We just don't know where.
He says he's hopeful Adair can be that school, but will definitely put his son's name in the lottery for some of Philly's top-performing charter schools. Another option, of course, would be to move to the suburbs.
I don't want to leave Philadelphia. I really like being in a local community and working nearby and not having to drive 45 minutes each way. So that is not at all interesting, but it is. It seems like a sad but real option, if other things don't play out.
For WHYY News, I'm Kevin McCory.